of the crop.
Welcome to the 160th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher. And we are recording this on the Tuesday evening before Arsenal face West Ham on a Wednesday night game at the Olympic Stadium. I will keep the panel introductions very brief this month, as you are all very familiar with these particular panellists. So it's almost a case of no introduction needed. However, let's at least say hello to number one, returning for the first time this season, our doom and gloom specialist, Mr. David Udoh.
Hello there.
Number two, fresh from getting the latest edition of the Hampstead Village Voice to press, with many an Arsenal face within, it's Mr. Mustafa Goldstein.
Hello.
And number three, gracing us with his presence on a more regular basis this season, the Highbury Spy himself, Mr. Steve Ashford.
Hello.
Right, gentlemen, so I'm just going to read the games we've had since the last podcast, which was during the international break. We had a home win against Spurs. Defeat in Cologne. Although we managed to win the group in doing so. Then we had the 5-0 thumping of Huddersfield. A last-minute winner at Burnley. A 3-1 home defeat to Manchester United. The 6-0 thrashing of Bartek Borisov. And to end the away draw at Southampton. So, is it just a typical Arsenal season we're witnessing here? I mean,
there were too many wins in that description, Kev.
It was a good November.
Better November than normal. Much better November than normal.
Yeah.
But you're only as good as your last match, or your last two matches, and our last two matches were diabolical.
Right.
You know, the way we started the game defensively. You just wonder, after all these years, when anyone on that coaching staff is going to learn, you know, how to keep a clean sheet, how not to throw games away when they really matter. You know, after giving two goals away in the first 5 minutes or 10 minutes against United, to then go to Southampton and be one down after 2 minutes I must admit, I missed the first 5 minutes of the match. I was out in the car. I said, before I even got home and started watching the game, we were 1-0 down. I was furious. Absolutely furious. You just think, why, oh, why, oh, why? When are we going to learn? And then you see the goal, and you just see Mertesacker give the ball away terribly, then fall over like Bambi on ice, and you know no one tracks their man, and then they could have gone three up. You know, they hit the bar, but he was offside with that one. And then Austin was through again, and Cech saved us. And you're just thinking, that never happens to any other team. Why is it always us?
You made the point to start with, which I made in the editorial match report I did the Southampton game. I mean, you look at our coaching team, and you've got the likes of Jens Lehmann. You've got Steve Bowles, the assistant manager. And based on their playing CVs, they know defence inside out. So you'd expect them to be very good at what they do. But they're like all of us. You just follow the instructions of your line manager. So they may want to suggest to Arsene to do things a certain way, but they're ordered by him to coach it this way. And what else do we do? Borja Primorac, who's been with me for the last 20 years? Do it like this. Yeah, do it that way. We're going to be absolutely fine. The man does not know how to defend.
No.
I mean, look, you look at the good defences he's had during his 20 years at the club. One, he was lucky and inherited. And then the second one was put together by sheer chance. Sol Campbell, he didn't want for financial reasons, and David Dean bought him. Our left back was supposed to sign for Crystal Palace when it found out that Savinho's work permit was actually drawn in crayon. So we had to keep some Ashley Cole. Our right back was bought as a central midfield player from Real Mallorca and got converted into an attacking right back who took our penalties. And the other centre half was an Ivorian centre forward who only played the centre half because of Keown's injuries. Again, sheer luck. Since then, dire.
I know. Go back to Sunday. Kolasinac. When we were going forward in the second half and we camped out in their area, why does he just keep going backwards, sideways? He must have had 10 opportunities in the second half on Sunday to just get a bit of burst of speed on, take the right back on, get behind the right back, get a crossing.
But that's what he was doing when he first came. Exactly. That's what he was doing. It's like Vermeulen. Vermeulen's first game, scored a blinder, attack, attack, attack. And now he's had a couple of months under Wenger, and he's trying to calm down, just pass it back.
Same as Xhaka. Yeah. His first two games, 35-yard efforts into the top corner, and you can see Wenger clap it, standing up, doing the two handshakes, turning around to Pimarac, saying, "We'll coach that out of him. Don't worry."
Yeah. Well, Kuznets, you're saying,
I don't get that. Why would you do that?
All of his attacking instinct has been coached out of him. You know.
Well, it is the style of the play, and am I right in thinking that basically the defenders are under instruction to play
possession,
the perfect pass,
and
there isn't a lot of wiggle room there if they get it a little bit wrong?
Well, Bellerin on the other flank, I mean, he does take his man on, so he's obviously told not to pass it sideways. He does take his man on, but he nine times out of ten, he balloons it over the bar.
Or kicks it over the defender.
In fairness, Kev's talking about the back three, because obviously you play a 3-4-2-1. And, Mustafa, I mean, look at the two Manchester United goals we conceded. I mean, why do our defenders seem to think that they're Beckenbauer? They must be brilliant in training and do it perfectly when they're, you know, playing 30-yard balls past lazy midfielders who they play against in training. But you would have thought it'd be once bitten, twice shy. But for us to do it twice in 9 minutes and the game over before half the crowd sat down, it was ridiculous and shameful.
I've got to say, I'm a little bit, annoyed with, I'm not feeling confidence in Bellerin at all. Haven't done for a while. I'm afraid Monreal is, I'm getting a bit sick of the sight of him chasing back, watching an opposition member put the ball in the back of our net. He always seems to be in the wrong place, against Man United, Mustafi just had to pass it to him, surely. You know, he was there, and okay, he was marked, and to be fair, Man United were, you know, they were harrying us and they were having a go at us, and something we don't seem to do that much. When we were great, we used to hunt in packs. That's what we did. Mm. You don't give someone the oxygen to breathe.
Well, look at City.
Best form of attack is defence. Is attack. You know,
they won 2-1 at Man United on Sunday, and all the pundits in the aftermatch discussions, they were all saying the reason United were so passive was because City never let them have the ball. As soon as they got it, there was 2, 3, 4 City men on them, all around the pitch.
That's right.
If City can do that, you know, that's the template. How come we don't do it?
You see, Man City are a very, very odd side. They play 4-1-4-1, and the back four, they've got this very boring, very simple Brazilian defensive central midfielder who they pass to, and then he passes to one of the four brilliant players in front of him, and they've got a magic centre forward. If only we had a team like that with Gilberto Silva, who played behind four brilliant midfielders and Thierry Henry stuck on. Oh no, we did. That's fine.
This is the thing, personnel, right? You've got to say, if you look at Chelsea, Man City, Man United, even now, their players and our players. And I'm going to name and shame here. I'm going to say, like, Xhaka, I'm afraid people won't agree with me, but Ramsey, Bellerin, I don't think those, for me, those three players in particular at the moment are not, they don't seem to be at the level required. They're not in the world of brilliance.
I agree with you with Xhaka. I think the other two are worth their place.
But if you watch Bellerin week in, week out, the amount of errors he makes and the amount of bad positioning, you know, and just like, you know, just not knowing where he is.
I think we should switch to a back four and put Debussy in.
I see Bellerin.
I think it's personnel.
If you watch Bellerin in Spanish under 21 games, he looks red hot. If you look in Welsh national games, Ramsey and Bale are leagues above everyone else on the pitch. Yeah. Again, our player, Xhaka, he's a number 10 for Switzerland. It looks fantastic. These players are following the instructions of their manager. If they didn't, they would be on the bench straight away. But, like when you see players before they go on the pitch, Wenger puts the arm around, talks in their ear. You never see the players turning around saying, "I'm not being funny, but we've been doing that for 70 minutes.
Well, don't you think it might be that when Bellerin's playing for the Spanish under 21s, or Ramsey's playing for Wales, it's a slightly different level a lot of the time than when you're playing against City or in the Premiership. You know, if you're playing...
Well, hang on a bit at Basti. Wales reached the semi-finals of the Euros.
Yeah, Ramsey had a very good Euros.
And they were knocked out for the game and Ramsey was suspended.
But that's Ramsey, isn't it? Ramsey had a blinding season for us, two seasons ago?
Your argument is the opposition Wales face is not of the same quality of the Premier League.
Well, no, that's okay. Maybe that argument's not such.
Well,
a good
it probably
one.
Is. If
but in Ramsey's season. Case, I'd say that yeah, of course he had the best season of all time. He was amazing, and you know, at the end of the season, he'll win us an FA Cup or score a blinding goal against Everton at home or whatever, right? But he's not consistently a player of class of the sort of class that you know he puts when you. So, I don't look. We can't all be Dennis Bergkamp, right? But you do expect a certain level of quality of passing, quality balls put in. And when someone's in front of goal, to get it on target, not sky it all the time. You know, when Xhaka or Ramsey are in front of goal and about to shoot, I just go, oh, they're going to scuff it. His technique when he kicks the ball, Ramsey as well. I mean, you can see when he's kicking the ball, he's scuffing it before he's kicked it.
It was a magic layoff for Lacazette against Man United. Special assist in fair.
Yeah, that was good.
But did he was beautiful.
Did he mean
it? Deft touch.
Did he mean
but shooting on goal.
Did he mean it?
Oh, I think so.
No, that he did. Yeah, that he did. He's good at those deft little things. But look, that's playground football. That's like Kanu, isn't it? But can you just shoot at goal when you're in front of it? That you know, simple stuff like that. That the bread and butter football. Those are the chances you've got put away. All this flicky, which we do over flick. I mean, I think sometimes we flick ourselves to death.
God, yeah.
You know, and Ramsey's good at the odd flick. We're good at the odd flick, great. And I mean, Sanchez is guilty of that, the overplaying.
So the elephant in the room that we've not mentioned, the manager, would all these players and our system and our formation, would a new manager get more out of these players than what the current one is?
Well, it depends on the manager, obviously, but quite possibly, yes.
I think he would have done. Look at Leicester at the start of the season. They were absolutely terrible. And then they got rid of their crap manager and got a very good manager in Claude Puel. And they're a different side. Mm. With exactly the same players because the transfer window was shut.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we've all been agreed for a few years now that maybe it's time for Monsieur Wenger to, you know, gracefully bow out, which he never does. He always, I mean, I think, you know, he's addicted to more and he just thinks he can still win a league. Mm. But I can't see it happening under him, can you?
I'm very sad and worried the only way we get rid of him would be, God forbid, he does a Jock Stein.
Oh. Well, while we're on the subject of defence, bring in some listener questions and topics. A regular contributor is Joe Gagliardi, and he says, I love the BFG, but isn't it time that either Holding or Chambers, if fit, are picked ahead of Purr? Both are young enough to handle playing Thursday and Sunday. Is it time to kiss goodbye to the club captain as a starting player?
I would think so. I think so, Kev. when you see Holding and Chambers together playing for England under 21s, and when you see him play last week against Bartek Borisov, I mean, I would say that they would probably, apart from Man City, maybe Man United and Chelsea, they would probably walk into most Premier League teams. I mean, when you look at Liverpool centre-backs, they would love to have Holding and Chambers instead of what they've got. And from Arsenal below, they would probably walk into any Premier League team. Burnley, they've had a few injuries recently at the back. He's been putting kids in from the youth team. And because he's a good coach up there, that guy, they're playing out of their skins. And those players that Dyche is playing are probably not as good as Chambers and Holding. Now, I think if we had a decent manager who invested in youth and decent young talent, Chambers and Holding would do a damn sight better than Mertesacker would. And I'd put them both in now, to be honest.
Well, the problem is, once again, is are they getting the guidance they need you know, from this management? Because, you know, as we've said already, he's not, like, defence isn't his forte. And I don't know what Bold's doing then, because really...
Yeah, pulling out the cones.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know... Again, you've got Mustafi and the BFG who are, and Koscielny as well. And Koscielny's been, you know, he's been a rock for years, but he's struggling. You can see he's struggling.
Yeah.
And the thing is that our current sort of back, those centre backs, they're getting on. Are they getting on? I mean, how old are they now? They
32, 30.
Koscielny is in his early 30s.
Mustafi's like the baby.
And here's the thing. Against one of those racy little, like, you know, City or United players or Hazard or someone, it's like, you know, they're going to come unstuck.
Yeah.
But by the same token, so will probably Chambers and Holding as well. Because, you know, I don't know if any of them are getting the kind of discipline and
tutelage.
They could, well, you've tutelage, thank you for the word. So they need a George Graham, is what they need, right? Or a Tony Adams. Well, Tony Adams isn't a manager, obviously, but They need someone. When Bold came in, I thought, oh, great. Mm. That's what we're going to get now. We're going to get the drilling, a good drilling. That's what they need. They need to be drilled.
Yeah.
And I don't think they are being any of them.
No.
Yeah, I can only think that, I mean, if you remember, when we bought Callum Chambers summer 2014, because of injuries, he played like the first third of the season and he looked absolutely great. But the thing is, Wenger, not knowing how defence works, just bore him into the ground.
So right back out of position.
Yeah, so I can only think that with Holding, maybe he's once bitten, twice shy, in the sense that this kid's really, really good, but if I play him too much, I might ruin him the way I ruined Chambers, who I couldn't give away in the summer.
Well, it seems like so many decisions are made on fear of, oh God, what might happen? You know, there's not a lot of bold kind of let's have it mentality. I mean, watching that film 89, you know, and seeing Graham, the way he worked that team, you know, I mean, you've got to take your hat off.
Oh, God, you really have.
I mean, what would you give to have George Graham, if he was sort of young, fit, and helped back now? You know what I mean?
Oh, well, George Graham only had Theo Foley going out the code and Stuart Houston doing most of the coaching, whereas Wenger's got a massive... he's got two goalkeeping coaches now.
Mm.
Are you including Lehman in that?
No, it was Sal Bibbo and Jerry Payton.
Oh, right.
Okay. Sal Bibbo?
Sal Bibbo, he's the guy who does the warm-up before the start of every game.
Oh, God. He's got the warm-up with...
Sal
Bibbo. Yeah. But once again, I've seen those warm-ups. They don't use a ball, ever, right?
I think they've started.
Have they started? Yeah. Because
they never used to. But
they really need to use a ball. I mean, that, you know, it's the old Shankly thing, you know.
Yeah. What's the thing about coming out for the second half and they all just do a little jog over the cones?
Yeah, a little turn.
That justifies Shad Forsyth's £1.1 million a year. That little thing before they go off the pitch before the first half, you know, right in front of where I sit, North Bank Upper, they put like a row of eight cones right on the touchline. They're supposed to, you know, stamp over them, like that. I mean, Sanchez does the first two and then just walks off. You know, couldn't give a flying fuck. But you just see Shad Forsyth walk away going, that's £1.1 million, thanking you.
David, are you obsessed with cones? You've been talking about cones the whole podcast.
I did more than Arson does.
So, I mean, just to finish the topic of defence, it was interesting to see Matteo Debussy get on the score sheet against Partey.
Oh, what a goal! What a goal!
Now, we were there.
And not many were. But my question is,
we got the t-shirt.
Although Debussy has been injured for quite some time, he has been fit for a while as well. You know, might we have done better by giving Bellerin a rest for some of those games?
Because you drop Bellerin once the next transfer window comes round and the move to Barcelona happens.
So that is not the reason. See, for me, I think that Bellerin is looking much too comfortable in his first team position, and I think he does need resting. In fact, sometimes I think he needs shooting. To be honest, he's not my favourite player at the moment. But he's much too comfortable there. And sometimes you get the feeling it's sort of like, well, I've got no competition for my place.
I think with Bellerin, we should just be grateful we've got him. Because if he was playing for Mourinho or Guardiola or even Klopp, I mean, you would see a different Bellerin.
Oh, yeah.
The raw talent is there.
I mean, they're not being managed properly, are they? They're not being trained properly.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's fairly symptomatic that Kolasinac has gone downhill since we've signed him. He's suffering from the same problems.
Now, you read that, I can't remember who did the summary, but I mean, the day after the tragic transfer window closed last summer, was that, you know, in terms of players who Wenger wanted to sell, but those players who actually wanted to go. Like, for example, I mean, Giroud he was the only name that Ronald Koeman had on his transfer desires, but of course he decided, no, my family want to stay in London. Based on the piece that I read, Bellerin asked to leave, but thankfully he's got a 7 or 8 year contract, I think it is. Yeah. Technically restraint of trade, but anyway, so he drops him once and then he'll get a niggly little heel injury. I don't think I can make it this week.
Well, I mean,
what's the situation with Mustafi, you reckon? Because he stayed and he was kind of mooted to go.
Yeah. Well, the club have completely denied that. It came from the BBC guy, whose name escapes me now.
Daniel Ornstein?
Daniel Ornstein, who did quite a few tweets, which...
It was him who did the piece about Bellerin's transfer request, actually.
Right. And, you know, the
I think Inter Milan were...
Privately, the club have actually really gone heavy on saying that is absolutely bollocks. You could see the logic of it. Mustafi's family are in Switzerland. He was looking at a move to Italy. His wife had another child, I think. So it was a case of wanting to be near the family. So it would have all added up, but it would have been a personal thing. It wouldn't have been a football decision so much.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I quite liked Mustafi if he wasn't quite so rash.
Well, I
mean, great against Tottenham, wasn't he?
Yeah,
good and bad.
And then Man United happened.
So we're moving to the forward line, and Simon Rose, who has been a panellist here more than once, has tweeted, Giroud's openly said he might have to consider a January loan. Should he be partnering Lacazette rather than being a late substitute for him? So that would mean us playing presumably a different formation.
In a word, yes, from me. I think that...
Who would you drop, Bas?
That would remind me...
Who would you drop?
To
make this 4-4-2.
You probably drop one of the centre-halves, wouldn't you? That didn't go 4-4-2.
You know me, I'm no formation expert.
Right.
I go on the beauty and the aesthetics of the game.
But I'd be Arsene's successor.
Let's put it this way. I remember the days of Wright and Smith, and that worked well.
Actually, I beg to differ there.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was Smith's injury that helped him fail.
Smith and Merson worked well, but Smith and Wright, Smith basically faded out of any kind of contribution because of the way the team were playing.
You've got a better memory than me.
Right.
I just remember them working well together. But
yeah,
maybe
I do as well.
Not really, no.
Well, Wright and Bergkamp worked well together.
Yes.
But that's a different number 10. That's a proper number 10. I mean, Giroud and Lacazette wouldn't work.
But Giroud does have the awareness and the skill, and he's as good a layer-offer and passer-toer and holder-upper of the ball. Not as good as Bergkamp. Once again, you know, you can't, no one's as good as Bergkamp, probably, but... Lacazette hasn't yet proved himself really to be Ian Wright, although I think his statistics are quite good for minutes on the pitch. Again, he doesn't play him for a whole game, does he? I mean, it's quite odd to have a £50 million striker and only ever give him 70 minutes.
Sunday, didn't he?
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced it was Wenger who bought Lacazette.
Really?
Well, obviously, he has the final sign-off on it, but I think he was half-forced into it by stats or... Gazidis or Kezik, but I mean, Wenger takes him off too easily.
Right, okay. I mean, the partnership that France use is Giroud with Griezmann.
Mm.
So obviously Griezmann isn't Lacazette, but he is another forward, a different kind of forward in a way.
Mm. He's more like Sanchez, isn't he, than he is Lacazette?
Yes, I think that's fair to say.
I think Lacazette's having a beginning to his Arsenal career similar to that of Henry and Bergkamp, in that it took them a few months to settle in. He doesn't look like he's sort of instantly that comfortable at the moment for me. He shows quality for sure, but he's not. He doesn't feel yet like he's kind of reached his potential.
I think I read today he's only had 6 shots in 510 minutes of away football.
But he's scored goals.
Mind you, and that's probably
away football.
And that's probably 6 more than the rest of the team.
Yeah, he doesn't like playing away, does he?
None of them do. Why is it we won 7 out of 8 at home, plus all of our cup games apart from Red Star Belgrade? Yeah, away from home we can't score for toffee.
It's an easy commute to the Arsenal Stadium.
It's the same pitch, isn't it?
That's because we fly to places like Ipswich.
Although I did notice on Sunday that Southampton grew their pitch to stop the short, pretty passing.
The grass was long.
The grass was quite long.
Okay.
And I hate it when teams do that. I think that's gamesmanship.
Well, yeah, but we've got to be good enough to play on any pitch. They're playing on it, we can play on it. We've got to adapt to the pitch we're playing. No, come on. A bad cross.
City adapt to it, don't they?
You don't blame your instrument.
In 2001, 2002, we lost 3 matches in winning the title.
Yeah.
All of them were at home.
Well, once again, if Wenger's a decent manager, he's going to look at that pitch and go, all right, let's start with Giroud and knock the ball in the air and let's just have a bit of that. Let's try something completely different, you know, rather than the pretty, pretty, pretty. We can always resort back to that later when we're 3-0 up.
Yeah, well, if it's a bit greasy, let's get some young centre-halves on.
Well, there was a reply to this tweet from Simon's question from Nick, and you'll have to bear with me here. Eleftheriou. A Greek, Nick the Greek, 23 Nick the Greek is his Twitter handle. He said, I'd love to see it, as in Lacazette with Giroud. I think 4-4-2 would make us more direct and less possession-based. Can't see how
Arsene Wenger can't see this. Mm. Because I think he can, and he doesn't want direct. I mean, that's probably what it is.
Well, remember that last season? The team, what was the match where the team sort of decided amongst themselves? Man City
away.
They thought, no, we're just going to do that.
Yeah.
And they did it, and we fucking trounced them.
That was when Cazorla was man of the match that day. And then we had
1-2-0, Just we sat back and let them press us, and we got two good goals.
I mean, talking of that game, that brings us on to Cazorla, because he was brilliant that day.
Mm.
I mean, now he's had another setback. Is he ever going to play for Arsenal again?
No,
I think we can confidently say no.
I think his career is over.
So when's his contract up?
It is, I think, the end of this season.
Right, so Wenger will give him another one then, probably.
I don't think he'd be allowed to.
I think they're called a Diaby contract.
But it was the medical staff, apparently. There was some kind of mess up in
I think the initial operation was botched.
Yeah.
They obviously...
How can you, at this level... Right, with the amount of resources and money you've got in the Premiership, send a player in for an operation to a bunch of fly-by-nights who don't know what they're doing.
Well,
how can you?
It's a difficult one to answer without knowing where he was operated on and by whom.
Well, you shouldn't be getting a sort of semi-lethal kind of...
Well, he almost had to his foot amputated at one point.
Yeah. No, because he caught a virus or something in there. What was it? He caught someone put the word in my mouth.
Gangrene or something?
Gangrene. And apparently his ankle is half the size of his other ankle.
Really?
Because of all these operations.
He's had to have half the arm with a tattoo on it, put on his
He's ankle. Never going to be able to withstand Premier League tackles on that ankle.
Well, one doctor said he's lucky to be walking again.
I wouldn't play him away at Stoke on a Wednesday.
It is a great shame. And as I recall, the actual injury at the time seemed fairly innocuous. It was away to someone like...
Home to Ludogorets,
I think it was away.
No, it was home to Ludogorets.
Okay.
I mean, if they're too quick to operate on things sometimes when... You know, I don't know. But, I mean, there seems to be something wrong with the way that when an injured Arsenal player is injured... Even when it's quite an innocuous thing, it seems to take a very long time for them to get back. I mean, this season, it's been weird we've got touch wood.
We've got new medical
staff, I think.
There was an Aussie guy starts, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to be working so far because we've got a small amount of injuries.
Well, apart from Cazorla, it's only Ramsey and Mustafi, and they're both short term.
Right, I'm going to finish on the current team subject here with a contributor, Brian Dawes, tweeting. His handle is @Guna48. He asks, if you could keep Ozil or Sanchez, who would you keep?
Oh, God, that's a difficult one, isn't it?
Ozil in a heartbeat for me.
Me too.
Ozil?
Probably Sanchez for me.
Hmm. The reason I would go with Ozil over Sanchez... is although Ozil has frustrated me a lot in a lot of ways, I feel the problem with Sanchez is that, yes, he's a great player and he can do great things. Sometimes he just has a tendency to hang on to the ball and twist and turn and twist and turn and show us what he can do and lose the ball.
Lost it 32 times.
And sometimes his attitude... I mean, the thing is also... I mean, Ozil, both of them are sort of prima donnas in a way, I think, attitude-wise. The one thing about Sanchez is his work ethic. I mean, he runs and runs and runs and works hard. But apparently they've done stats on Ozil, who does run a lot more than he appears to run and everything. But he has that knack of putting in good passes, good crosses, and he still does make a hell of a lot of goals. He doesn't score a lot, but he makes a lot. And I think as a team player, and I think Arsenal is a team that it should be about playing for the team, there's no I in team, I do feel that Sanchez, I don't know, I don't feel he's that comfortable playing with us. And I reckon it'd be better for Arsenal. If it was one of them, I'm not saying I want either of them to go, but I'd probably hang on to Ozil.
I would keep Sanchez, because I think if he was committed to the club and he signed a contract and he had a decent manager telling him when to release the ball and when not to, I think his sheer talent and his ability and his work rate would be much more valuable than Ozil's. Well, he tends to go missing in those big games.
Well, to quote Liam Brady, if my nan had ball, she'd be my granddad. So, he plays for Sanchez FC for me.
I love Ozil, but
I mean, that's the thing. A good player shouldn't need a manager to tell him when to release the ball. You know, you've got a player on, there's a pass on, you've got past one player, the player's on, you pass it. You don't have to prove to everyone that you turn the other way again and just, I'm going to beat the player again.
Be interested to see if he goes to City, whether he loses the ball 32 times in a match.
Well, there is that, yeah. Look, if a player's doing that, I'm surprised that Wenger wouldn't go up to him and say, look, Alexis, why don't you just, like, you know when you twist and turn and do that player? And unfortunately, I think a lot of the time, he turns around, he looks up, he sees Xhaka.
Yeah.
You know, or he sees Ramsey, and I don't think he feels confident in them.
No.
Because this is the thing. I mean, this brings us back to the level of players that we've got. I know there are Rambo files here, and I love Ramsey, but I don't particularly like him a lot of the time.
He's not as good as the players that Sanchez had behind him at Barcelona. Was it?
No. You know, but why did Barcelona get rid of Sanchez so easily?
They bought someone else. They bought Neymar, didn't they?
Yeah, so they went up a gear, didn't they? They went up a level.
Might have been Suarez, actually.
Well, Suarez, who was about, well, he's 3 years younger than Sanchez, isn't he? 3 years older, excuse me.
Yeah, because Sanchez came in 2014 and Suarez went to Barcelona.
Because Liverpool's first choice to replace Suarez was Sanchez.
Is Suarez 32?
Yeah. Is he?
Because Sanchez is only 29, isn't he?
He's got 32 teeth.
He can't.
32 inches.
32 in Sanchez, Suarez, surely. I would have thought Suarez was only about 29, 28, same age.
No, Suarez is early 30s because he's been bang out of form this year. There's a piece about him on the BBC website.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been out of form.
Great that Chelsea got Barcelona, wasn't it?
Champions League draw and Juventus and Spurs was the other cracker.
Good. When was that?
Yesterday.
Do
you know who we've got best?
No.
In the Europa League.
We've got Östersunds, haven't we? I corrected the club for misspelling it. They didn't put the umlaut on.
Oh.
I said, everyone's going, oh, who is
that? Mr. Udo, you should be the expert.
Everyone onto the Twitter sphere was going, oh, who are Östersunds or Östersunds, right? And I said, well, they're a big enough club to know how to spell their own name.
Sutton United, that's all you need to know.
It's a club.
And they've got a plastic pitch.
It's a club that was
formed. They've got a plastic pitch.
Yeah, plastic pitch.
It was a club that was formed in the fourth division in Sweden 1 month after Arsene Wenger started at Arsenal.
Really?
True story. They're only 20 years old. True story. Yeah. And their manager is former West Brom and Stoke City legend left back, Graham Potter.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Someone tweeted, we're going to lose 2-1 there and then come back and just sort of win.
Do the
Giroud in the last
minute. Well, it's the average temperature there in February is apparently -5 degrees.
Oh, we can live with that. We've had that last week.
Well, interestingly enough, do the Arsenal players fancy the cold? Yeah. It'll be the reserves anyway. Right?
Yeah,
let's face it. It'll be putting the second stringers out.
Well, do you know what? That second string team, you know?
Yes.
When you look at that bench on Sunday and against Man United, look at that bench, you think, is Xhaka better than Wilshere? Is Lacazette better than Giroud? Is one of the centre halves better than Chambers or Holding? You know, it's a second string.
Is Bellerin better than Debuchy? Yeah, we were talking about that.
Debuchy, Bellerin. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said for putting a lot of those players in the actual first team.
Well, Debuchy's out of contract at the end of the season. I think say he'll probably sign a pre-contract in January.
No, apparently he's got 18 months to go yet.
Debuchy?
Yeah.
Well, I would play Debuchy for some games.
Yeah.
If you're playing a team like, I don't know, Southampton, for example, you could have rested Bellerin for that and played Debuchy, couldn't you? And maybe then Debuchy's going to say, I've got to really show, right?
Yeah.
Because this is my chance, so I'm going to have a go. You don't play Debuchy against City and Chelsea just first game, but you warm him up against someone. And maybe West Ham, play Debuchy against West Ham.
We signed Debuchy the same sum we bought Sanchez, and if his agent managed to get a 5-year contract. I want that agent.
Arnautovic did for Debuchy, didn't he, when he pushed him into those hoardings?
Yep. Yes.
Well, what a great goal. He struck that so truly, didn't he?
He did. Oh,
it was a beautiful goal. Yeah. I think it was the nicest goal I've seen all season from Arsenal, actually.
Yeah, it was good.
Well, one of the players who played in that game, who was actually the captain of a team on that particular evening, was one Theo Walcott. Now,
he played all right, actually.
It's interesting.
David Udo just squeaked.
It's interesting to note that Theo has not actually started a Premier League match this season. It's also interesting to think that he is due a testimonial. Now, Arsene.
Has he been with us for 10 years?
He signed in 2006. 2006.
January
2006. Now, it's interesting that Arsene kept giving Theo chances, but now suddenly he's out in the cold, really.
Yeah.
You know, he's not even always on the bench for the Premier League games.
Although Wenger does argue that he's got two first teams. The first team.
So he only plays. Yeah. He only plays one of them in the Premier League.
Yeah.
The only competition he's actually fussed about this season.
Yeah. We've got two teams for the price of one. I mean, going to that Europa Cup League game the other day, it really felt like, oh, we're watching Arsenal, but it's like another Arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? This is the first year we've not been in the Champions League, which means that all of the first team players have had a complete week off.
Yeah.
For 6 weeks,
when there's been Champions League games. Has it done them, Steve?
Exactly. That's my point. So we've had six completely free weeks when ordinarily we would have been playing Champions League games. And I would probably argue that out of those 6 weeks, we've probably lost three or four times, you know, at the end of those Champions League weeks, when we've had a completely free week. So what the fuck good has it done? Resting all those players for a week.
So all that talk of clogged up
schedules. Tired. He's tired.
Yeah, they're all so tired.
We need a tire, we need a rest.
Yeah, look, they're in their 20s. They're footballers.
Yeah.
They can play once or twice a week, can't they?
Oh, Chelsea and Man United, Man City, Spurs and Liverpool are doing all right between Wednesday and Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. So next year, when we're in the Champions League, they are playing twice a week, and Wenger brings out the old excuse, oh, the Champions League, fuck off.
Right. Interesting to think we'll be in the Champions League next season.
Going back to Theo Walcott, I think it's safe to say he hasn't started not being on the bench, because I think it's safe to say he is being kept fit to make sure we can get rid of him in January. I mean, bearing in mind, we've got to find someone who's going to pick up £140,000 a week as well as a fee. If we can get a 60% wage deal, I think we'll take that. And it's going to be Everton, really, isn't it?
You think Everton?
Or West Ham?
Moyes might be. I tell you what, we've got West Ham this Wednesday, and I'm not. I mean, before they beat Chelsea 1-0, you think, oh yeah, West Ham, nice 3 points. Yeah. Now you're thinking,
They run City close as well.
Everton
they
actually money though.
They actually run City closer than what Man United run them.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm. Well, I mean, for Theo, as a footballer with any kind of ambition. He's never been to a World Cup in which he's played a minute of football. And he is getting on, you know. So this could be his last chance. So he's got to play. If he has any...
Can I just point something really odd out? I know this sounds ridiculous, but I'm, you know, playing the fool and devil's advocate.
Yes.
But I've noticed with Walcott and Bellerin, haircuts, right?
Yeah.
Bellerin short hair, Bellerin long hair. For me, much better with short hair.
Yeah.
Walcott, not straightened hair, probably still not that good, but he's disappeared since he's done his hair straightening.
I think Walcott looks better with his hair like it is now.
I disagree.
I don't think makes him look more handsome, definitely.
I think it's silly.
I think we're not being a sidetrack.
Because usually Walcott's got a
Ramsey scale. Without the beard.
Usually Walcott's got a
Giroud scale, with the beard, Giroud without the beard.
I tell you what troubles me more, it's all these damn tattoos.
Yeah. I didn't like.
Oh, God, Walcott's got his fair share of those, isn't he?
I didn't like Giroud's beard at first, but it's definitely grown on me now.
Definitely well, when he does a header like he did against Southampton, who cares?
Yeah.
Do we think Theo's going to get a testimonial? Yes or no?
Will there be a record low crowd if he does?
Am I correct in saying he was actually entitled to it last summer?
I mean, do you think we'll ever see another testimonial anyway?
No. Yeah, Rositsky was the much-mooted Rositsky testimonial.
We were doing like a farewell game.
That never happened.
No, he joined 6 months after Walcott, and he left summer before last. So
right, so he only did 9 years.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I was born on exactly the same day as Thomas Rositsky.
Oh, well, that's an
interesting. The only way you could do that is if you doubled it up with a Emirates Cup game or something like that next summer or something.
Right, okay.
The Emirates Cup game.
Oh, yeah, like Birmingham.
Jeremy Aliadier was due a testimonial.
Jeremy Aliadier.
I think Jack Wilshere.
I mean, it's funny.
Jack Wilshere might be due one soon, you know?
Yeah. Jack Wilshere's been here since he was nine, hasn't he?
Well, he's been at the club since literally he was, whatever it was, 8 years old or something.
The last testimonial I think anyone can think of was Rooney's. and with him being on what, £350,000 a week.
Well, it was for charity.
I was going to say, you know, I mean,
that's the only reason you have
to. Testimonials used to be to get Martin Hayes, you know, £25,000.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you know, it's just for shits and giggles.
So that he could open a pub or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Do we remember any particularly enjoyable testimonials from the old days?
Yeah. Oh God, there were some great ones.
David O'Leary. David O'Leary and Man United let him run through the whole team to score at the end.
Yeah, I remember seeing Gascoigne play for Arsenal in a testimonial.
Mercy's.
Was it Mercy's?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I remember I seemed to quite enjoy it.
I used to love a testimonial. It was, the pressure was off. It was all a bit of a laugh. But you get a full house. I mean,
well, when Celtic were the opposition, it was a proper game as well.
We had some good ones against Celtic.
Tony Adams had two testimonials. One was against Celtic.
Were you sure?
No, because his first one,
Palace.
It barely half filled the stadium.
Are you sure of a second one?
Palace was one. He had one against Palace. Tony Adams had one against Palace, didn't he?
Yeah, his first one was against Palace. Barely sold half the tickets.
That's it.
Whereas the second one did sell out. I think it was sold, but I'll have you stand corrected.
Why did he get two?
Because
the first one didn't sell fuck up.
20 years.
If the first one don't succeed,
18, well, they gave it to him.
His second 10 years, his debut
was in 83, but he'd signed as pro probably in 82.
Yeah.
So he finished in 2002.
So I suppose he was due to.
Well,
and by the time he got the second one, he'd had a pretty good innings. Those last years, and that's that. You just turn up just for that goal against Everton.
You could get a decent suit then, wouldn't you?
I'm pretty sure he could. He likes that suit.
I will not hear a bad word said about TA's suit.
I love Tony. Love Tony. Love that suit.
Well, I should actually share because we're.
Yes, let's now move on to the 89 premiere in which all four of us were in attendance.
Did we speak about that last time?
We actually recorded the night before the premiere.
Did we really?
We did.
So now we've all seen it.
We've all seen it. And Basti was certainly moving and shaking on the
evening. Moving and shaking, yes. Had a lovely little chat with Tony Adams and David Seaman and Ian Wright. And they're real gentlemen, lovely people. I mean, I've got to say, as I approached them, it felt like approaching family. And they were just, and I said to them, I said, you know, it's just so nice to see you guys. You know, I feel like I've grown up with you. And they were like, oh, that's lovely. And they were all sort of really nice, you know, just really nice people. And I said to Wrighty, I said, I really loved that scene where you were, you know, when you cried for David Rowcastle. Oh. It was so touching. And he said, oh, it's so nice of you to say so. And he was just sort of really lovely about it. And then I had a little chat with Smudger as well. And
Mickey Thomas,
well, just a little, a sort of hello. And Mickey Thomas kept sneezing, and I said, "Are you allergic to me?"
Did you?
Because I was talking to him, he kept going, sneezing. I had a sneezing fit.
So did you ask him when he signed for Liverpool? Did he wish he'd never scored that goal?
No, I didn't. We didn't get that far because he sneezed off into the distance.
Yes,
but
he had scored Liverpool in the cup final anyway, didn't he?
He had to do selfies with some other attendees, as I recall. But anyway,
I loved the film.
I thought it was a very good film.
I enjoyed the night out. Enjoyed, you know, I didn't actually talk to any of the ex-players like Basti did, but I enjoyed being in their company and seeing them. But to be honest, I thought that scene with Wrighty was just a little bit over the top. Because Wrighty wasn't around in 89. He didn't join until 91.
But he was on the same. He was on the same estate. He was mates with him. They were mates. They grew up together. They played runouts together.
And I was living in Forestdale at the time, and I knew David Rowcastle as well. And
no, you didn't.
You know, I know I didn't. But I just thought there was. I just thought that was a little bit of Ian Wright just trying to muscle in.
Not at all.
Wright would have been invited. You know. To take part in the film.
Yeah, he wasn't muscling
it. Interviewed on, presumably based partly on the documentary they did about Wright and Rowcastle.
Yeah,
BT Sport. That presumably was the inspiration for thinking.
Yeah. It's just him being himself.
Yeah.
We can get some Rocky in here through his mate.
Yeah, I love Ian Wright. I think he's brilliant, but I did think that was just a little bit over the top.
Well, did you ever see that bit of footage?
You've got to blame the producers for that.
Steve. Well, no, I don't think it was, because I think the thing is, it was an emotional thing for anyone, you know, look, we've all been singing Rocky's name for years since, and anyone who watched him play and had spent time with the man while he's on the pitch, so to speak. And for whether you're on the stands or whether you're on the pitch, you're going to have feelings about that. Yeah. And Ian Wright, who at the time, from his estate, right, where he grew up in a not very wealthy, you know, tough estate, and they, you know, to see his mate go and win the league in that fashion at Liverpool, what that meant for the people on that estate and for his, him and his mates, and then that Rocky, you know, passed away in the way he did, I don't see anything wrong in showing some emotion. I mean, you know, let's have the stiff upper lip, Steve. Let him have a cry.
It's a great film, though. Loved it.
It was a good film. Very, very interesting contrast to...
And if any of the listeners haven't seen it, you know, they've got to get it for Christmas.
I'm pretty sure they will see it on Christmas.
I'll tell you what an emotional roller coaster of a film. I mean, you're going up and down, even though you know the final result. You're at the edge of your seat and the hairs are crawling up the back of your neck and you're as tense as can be.
Oh, no spoilers. No spoilers.
It's a real thriller, isn't it?
Would it be true to say it took you right back?
Oh, yes.
I think the greatest thing in the film was when we've drawn with Wimbledon and lost with to Derby the week before that Liverpool game.
Yes.
Which meant we had to win 2-0. And you'd see all the coaches lying up outside the East Stand in the sun on that Friday afternoon. It was a heat wave at the time. Really, really hot day. And you could really see that, you know, in the shots from the match, you know, later on that evening. I mean, the players are sweating. It really is like, it might as well be a World Cup game.
What interested me...
But all the coaches are all lined up and you see all the fans full of expectation getting on the coaches, you know, and they're all saying, yeah, we're going to do it, we're going to win, we're going to do it, you know. No one really thought that.
What interested me was the footage they got, which was, I don't know where they got it from, but it was from the touchline, and it showed the tackles during the game.
Which were very
physical indeed.
Oh, today that'd be four red cards, wouldn't it?
Probably.
And there's right at the end, John Barnes is through, and you know, and we're winning 2-0, but John Barnes is, and there's quite a crunching tackle, I think, from Kevin Richardson, and you're just thinking, oh God, you know, looking at it now, you think, oh, well, that'd be, you know, he'd have gone down now and been given a penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that evening when we watched the film, and I said to Smudger, right, and I went up to Alan Smith, and I said, you know, one thing that really struck me about that film was the passion. And I always thought Merson was a slow player, right, but the rate he was running up and down at Anfield that night, and just the sheer determination of that team. And I said to Alan Smith, I said, God, I mean, why can't this team show that kind of determination and grit, you know? And he said, well, it they're totally different these days. It's, you know, it's all a bit more cosseted and it's a bit less discipline. And I mean, like that scene where George Graham was going on about, you know, someone said, oh, he'd hit you over the shins with a stick, and not metaphorically, you know, that sort of thing. And they are the players today, mind you.
They're not in fear of the manager.
They're not in fear of the manager, definitely not. And another thing is that they may have watched that film before the Tottenham game, because they seemed to turn up for that Tottenham game. It was almost as though... I had the feeling that they'd all got to see that film. Jack Wilshere was at the film, and I'm just wondering whether someone said to look, everyone's
he was the
got
only first team player there, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Yes.
But they turned up against Tottenham like they just watched that film.
Yeah. You're right.
I wonder if they had.
Oh, well, what was good about that film is it's only what, like 27. How many years ago was it now?
28.
28 years ago. How virtually every player on that pitch, in all the teams that we played that year, we're all British. In 28 years now, probably only 10% of each team is British.
Yes.
I think Lukic has to be at least foreign. Lukic had to be, have some kind of East European with a name like Lukic.
Well, there was that urban myth about him, wasn't there? That his mum was pregnant with him on the 1958 Munich flight.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Urban myth.
That's right.
But I'll tell you what they should do. Yeah. They should show that film on the bus every away game to Arsenal. Should be made to watch that film on the way up to wherever they're going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Turn up there and go, right, come on, let's have it.
Because if we can win 2-0 at Anfield on a night like that, we can certainly win at bloody Southampton.
I think it's a really good motivational film. I think, you know, if I was a manager, I'd just make everyone watch it.
Yeah, but our players are far too sharp. They're probably there talking and debating about Dostoyevsky for the duration of the coach.
They've probably got their headphones on for starters. Yeah. But even if they didn't, the film would need subtitles for some of the players.
You get the vibe off it, though.
Oh, okay. I wonder if they still play cards on the trips to away games.
Oh, no, Wenger's banned that.
Has he?
Yeah.
So gambling will affect the... Yeah.
Morale.
Yes.
He's done that. He's banned that. He's banned sparkling water. He's banned pornography.
He did originally ban the porn channels in the hotels. However, in this day and age, how are you going to ban a player using their phone?
Yeah.
Okay?
Pourquoi tu veux le...
Maybe propose the way Giroud approaches the issue by getting somebody in. Anyway.
Did I read that in Arsenal? By Alex Flynn and Kevin Witcher about the porn being banned. I think
yes,
that's where I read
it.
Yes,
certainly did. We did. So,
still hasn't fucking signed it for me. Sorry, language. I do apologise.
Sorry, let's use the F word.
Now, I'm going to move on to a couple of potentially significant signings that you guys are going to tell me. But Raul Sanlé from Barcelona, and I can't remember his first name, but Mislintat, is it? Well, how do you say that, David?
Sven Mislintat, isn't it?
Sven Mislintat from Borussia Dortmund. So we've got a guy from Barcelona, a guy from Dortmund. However, these are not players. Raul Sanlé used to be effectively a director of football.
But he's director of football Barcelona, but he's not director of football Arsenal.
Well, he's not going to ever have that title as long as Arsenal.
Director of operations, isn't he?
He is a transfer fixer. Yeah. That's what he does. He secures players.
Good luck with that.
Mislintat is a scout with a very good record, better than.
Was he from Dortmund?
From Dortmund. He discovered Lewandowski. He discovered Dembele.
Aubameyang,
and there's been others.
So the biggest one of the lot, Dembele.
What is the significance? Not financially. Is the significance of these two new arrivals in terms of Arsenal's future?
Well, they were very much appointed by Ivan Gazidis. Wenger's had no say in it whatsoever. And I think in his first interview, the first thing he said was, "I sign off on all transfers, not Ivan Gazidis." So okay, right, that's fine. Well, tell that to your daughter when you're not manager next summer, love.
Well, hang on, does that count? Do these really count as transfers? I wouldn't put these as transfers.
I've been told by people who know a lot more than I do about European football that these are the most important signings the club have made probably since the turn of the millennium on any level.
Well, I'll tell you what, that the Spanish guy's not starting until February, is he?
Correct.
So he's going to miss the January transfer window.
Mm-hmm. Oh, spoiler alert, I'm not signing anyone, don't worry.
No, we've got the World Cup in the summer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, before that, all the players will be away with their training camps. Mm. When they come back, because we've signed this stupid deal that says in England we can't sign any players after August the 10th or whatever it is, whereas everyone else can still sign until August the 31st. When are we going to sign these players?
We've got 4 weeks, Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
4 weeks.
And they're all going to be on their holidays, aren't they?
Well, they'll have agents.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to sign their agents.
Do you think those players sit in on the negotiations? All the players do, and they're on the phone with the agent. The agent says you're being offered this by them.
Yeah.
Will you
they're
take
by
it?
The pool, aren't they? Yeah. And the agent phones up and says, "Do you want to play for Arsenal? You've got this offer." And he's sitting there going, "Well, I'll just go for a swim now. I'll think see how we feel about that."
Yeah.
Raul will do the smart thing. He'll be jetting around the world, I would have thought. You know, maybe going from training camp to training camp in Russia.
Yeah.
You know, that's his job.
So he'll find all these players and he'll say to Arsene, "Got this great player, absolutely fantastic. You know, cheap at the price, got to sign him. You know, he's going to be the next Aubameyang." Wenger will go, "No, we have Lacazette."
Well,
so what's the point?
What is the point?
Well, do we know Xhaka? Yeah. He might want to replace Xhaka, Bellerin, and Rambo.
Do we think Arsene is actually being undermined here?
Not if he's still got the final sign off on.
But
transfers.
Has he?
I think this is exactly what Gazidis wanted to do. I think there's an awful lot of truth in the suggestion that him and definitely him. I'm not sure about Sir Chips Keswick. But definitely wanted us to change manager in the summer. And it was Wenger, rather than going out on the lash with the players or whatever, going straight to the Dorchester, whatever hotel Stan was staying at, begging for a new contract, essentially. And then for the rest of the summer, Gazidis says, well, you know what, Arsene? Let's do exactly what you want to do. That's absolutely fine. And then we fudged up the entire transfer window to which at the end of it, Gazidis says, right, you've had your month. This is my month. And made these two appointments.
Mm. Yeah, good. Well, I just hope you're right.
We
were discussing before we went live whether we thought this was going to be Wenger's last year.
Yes.
Bearing in mind, we've lost six games already.
Five, haven't it?
Could have been six, but for 2 minutes on Sunday.
Mm. Yeah, but it's not even. We're not going to win the league then, are we?
We could possibly go on a run of six games tomorrow at West Ham, the way they're playing. You know, if we finish fifth or sixth this year, don't win the Europa League, don't win the FA Cup, is it curtains?
Well, that is the question.
Well, and also the Europa League, right? People are going, oh, we're favourites, we're going to win the Europa League. Hang on a minute. You've got Dortmund.
Atletico Madrid.
Milan.
Lyon.
Napoli.
Sevilla.
No, Sevilla playing Man United in the... Atletico Madrid who are the red-hot favourites. We're second favourites according to Odds Checker.
Oh, really?
And then you've got Napoli, Milan... Spartak
Moscow in there. We wouldn't fancy a trip there.
But Milan, I mean, I don't fancy us in the San Siro.
No.
Well, we haven't got Henri anymore.
Well, the last time we went there.
I know, we got hammered, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, on the subject of Europa League, certainly I know three of us were in attendance at the Bartek Borisov game. David, were you there?
I think there was a fourth person. That was must have been you.
No, I sadly had tickets to go and see one of my favourite bands. So the thing is, I gave my tickets to a girl that I really fancy at work, and her flatmate went, but it was so cold they left after half an hour.
Oh my god.
I wouldn't have thought so.
What's her name? I'm going to tell her to listen in.
You don't have to compromise anyone.
I'm not going to name names, it'd be unfair to Kelly McGill.
Right. What's her name?
Hertz.
Oh, yeah. They're on our label.
There we go.
Yeah, could have got freebies.
By the way, now.
Can I just say, I'm starting a band. Ridiculous.
Is it in tribute to the football team we're discussing?
Well, we may well see Highbury Sunshine sometime. Bring an old classic. Right.
The reason I have raised the Bartek Borisov game is to discuss the idea that in the old days, if you had a season ticket, does that mean you always went? Because season ticket is treated as an option to attend the game. Whereas possibly, and this is what I'm asking you guys, at Highbury, and maybe Steve is probably the best person to answer this, because did you have a season ticket at Highbury?
For years, yeah.
Right, okay.
And I only stopped having a season ticket when we left Highbury.
Right then. Well, actually, that's not technically true. No, I was getting you tickets in the last season.
No, anyway, earlier asked you messed me around.
You did.
I went, okay. I had to go red.
So now, you two can answer this question. I think David's too young, possibly.
Well, I had a season ticket for years, yeah.
So when you thought, right, okay, there's a game on, you didn't think, shall I go or shan't I go?
No, you just went.
Yeah.
Right. You did.
And if
you
couldn't go, you'd bloody well make sure a close friend would borrow your season ticket.
Mm.
But you'd just go. That would be it.
Yeah.
I had a West Ham season ticket for a long time, and then I had North Bank one, then West Ham, then North Bank. And then I missed a couple of years because I went abroad, and I came back, and it suddenly went all this red level, silver red level stuff. And I said, look, can I just renew my season ticket? They said, no, get to the back of the queue. I went, F you. I had a season ticket for my whole life, and this is how you treat me.
Well, that's funny you had that problem then, because we all renewed ours.
No, but
you
went away.
I had to go away
for 2 years.
I should have done,
but I didn't think, you know, it was when I started having a season ticket, it was just a case of did you have enough money?
Yes.
It wasn't,
yes.
You know, if you had money, you'd get the ticket.
Well, you're going to get it back after 2 years.
Basti's absence coincided with our success, basically. It was the demand for tickets.
Well, that's it. It was just that. It was that. It was a bad time to go away for a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, I think with me though, David, Kev, at Highbury and in the early years of the Emirates, I wouldn't have dreamed of selling my ticket or missing any games at all.
Mm.
I went to every single match, all of them, the lot of them.
Mm.
And then when the tickets started going up to, you know, like 60, 70, 80, 90 quid.
Yes.
For grade A games.
Yes.
It makes financial sense to miss those grade A games.
Yeah, but your seat at least is being used.
Oh yeah, so
that certainly wasn't the case at Bartek Borisov.
No, I'll never leave it empty.
Right.
See, it's not the thing. I mean, A senior manager at my company who left last year, but one of the very senior managers, he's got two tickets at club level. And not in the corner, very cheap ones at £2,500 a year. He's got two close to centre, £5,000 a pop. And he only goes about three or four times a year.
Right.
It's just for having, you know, the opportunity to go to Arsenal if you want to, or going for your Facebook check-in and selfie.
Right, so nice, basically, it is an option.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, it's, I mean, but
you get a free watered down pint of Carling at half time. So,
but that's the sort of fellow who might use his yacht in, you know, his chalet in St Moritz now and again.
Yeah. Right, I'm just going to go now for a figure to the nearest.
What?
Thank you.
You've got ghosts.
So the nearest 1,000.
There's a poltergeist.
Basti's lost his
bottle. I'm asking now for a prediction on the Friday 22nd attendance against Liverpool.
Attendance?
I want to know what you think. To the nearest 1,000, how many will show up?
What, Liverpool at home?
On Friday the 22nd December.
Are we talking tickets sold or actual?
No, actual bodies.
And 2 days before Christmas?
Bombs on seats.
3 days before.
Right, so
the last day of work.
Well, your director guy is going to be in his chalet in St Moritz.
It's Christmas on a Monday. It's Christmas on a Monday this year.
It is.
Oh, so it's 3 days before Christmas.
I don't know. That's...
Well, I reckon it'd be 60,000.
You think it'll be?
Why would anyone not go to that game?
Because it's a Friday night before Christmas.
Yeah, well, but what else are they going to do?
I think a lot of tourists are going
to
go.
I mean,
there's a long-running joke that Liverpool fans had troubles getting to the derby on Saturday because flights from Norway were being cancelled. I've been told by friends of mine who are Liverpool fans, when they go there, they are surrounded by tourists. I mean, Christ, I mean, a couple of times... the very few times I've been able to go to Arsenal games, I've had to sell my ticket through Ticket Exchange, that they go in 2 seconds. Bought by a tourist straight away.
Are they single or a pair?
Single.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because my dad, the first time I couldn't go, my dad told me to never come again, because this gorgeous 18-year-old Japanese girl, massive Adam's apple, was sat next to him. And he didn't want me to come back again.
But that's right. What was the Adam's apple bit?
It was a deliberate joke.
That's the first time I've met someone with an Adam's apple fetish.
Trevor, his name was. But seriously, I mean, people get rid of their stuff through Ticket Exchange. And, you know, holiday... tourists in London. It's like if you're in New York and you get to go and see a baseball match in the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Yeah.
You know, of course you'll go. I think I agree with Steve. I think it'll sell out.
It'll be
a 58,000.
I think it might clash with a few Christmas parties and stuff, so maybe not then.
Okay.
But I think most Christmas parties are over by that day.
By that time, I would say at least 55.
Everyone's finished
not
work,
full,
they?
Yeah.
And if it's a mild night, then you're guaranteed.
What about scores?
If you want to predict a score then, go on.
What about West Ham first?
Well, I reckon we'll beat West Ham tomorrow night.
1-1.
Let's do them.
Right, so 2 and a draw. And for Liverpool?
Fucking hell, I'm scared.
Right, we'll take that as a defeat. David?
2-1 defeat.
Steve? I think we'll beat them. We have to beat them.
1-1. There is that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've been...
I didn't say defeat. I just said fucking hell, I'm scared.
Right, all right. Well, we've been going for...
Because Salah, that Salah bloke.
Yes.
Would you have him?
Well, he seems to be playing all right this season.
How good is he?
We've been going for over an hour, and I know one of the panel has a commitment to attend a Works Christmas party. So on that note, I will just give a quick plug for the current issue with Guna, coincidentally awarded the Fanzine of the Year.
I'm gutted my invite got lost in the post to the dinner.
The policy was to ask regular contributors... who basically contribute every single issue and most of them
but for
a longer time anyway, and never get paid or rewarded anyway. You get lots of food through this here podcast.
Oh God, the way they work it! God, this is what I call corporate. Yeah.
All the guys who were there. Basically, we've never really done anything.
So you're not adding up, then, are you, Kev?
I would have liked to invite 3 times the number of people I did. However, we could only.
I was hoping to be an after dinner speaker, Kev.
To a table.
Actually, I went in disguise as James Richardson.
Well, actually,
I didn't even know it was taking place.
I didn't think we'd have a cat in hell's chance of winning, and I just thought it would slip under the radar.
So, how many fanzines are there that are still going physically, Kev?
I'd guesstimate there are probably around 20 to 30
in the entire football league. Or just the
in England and probably Scotland as well.
Right, only 20 or 30?
At the most.
Blimey, yeah. And we won.
We did well. I mean, you know, you had to be nominated, but you got nominated.
Presumably the other 19 are still put together on typewriters.
Some of them look far better than the Gooner, in all fairness. But
Can I just put a little plug in then for the Hampstead Village Voice, which has more Arsenal players in it than any edition. If you do happen to be living somewhere in Camden, West Hampstead, South End Green, Highgate, as far afield as Golders Green, you can buy the Hampstead Village Voice, which has got a very good review of 89, the film, and is littered full of Arsenal players throughout the whole magazine. There you go.
Plug over.
Including Freddie Ljungberg, by the way.
We will just do a quick plug for the current Gooner, which can be bought outside the ground at the home and away matches, or online if you wish to order it through the store section of the Gooner website. It's a bit of a 1989 special this time around, with tons of nostalgia, and subscriptions are also available. If you want details of the content, just click on the issue cover on the right side of our website's homepage, onlinegooner.com. As usual, a reminder
of the year.
Oh, I will just quickly say thanks to Pete Mountford. The reason I didn't ask your question, which was how much rooted disinterest and detachment from the club is the Wenka Kroenke situation causing, how much long-term damage could this do to the fan base, the club and its status? I think we've pretty much covered that many times before, and we'll do again, but we didn't have time tonight.
Brief answer, Pete. This season, not at all. Right. Last year, a lot.
Anyway, as usual, a reminder that you can contact us regarding anything to do with the podcast via Twitter at GoonerPodcast and email GoonerPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for your questions and topics submitted for today. With that, it's goodbye from David.
Goodbye.
Mustafa.
Goodbye.
And Steve.
Goodbye.
And
Merry Christmas to all of
you. Oh, yes, and a Merry Christmas. Merry New Year to you too.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho.
And after all your celebrations, we will be back with the next edition in January. Until then, this is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thank you for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Hooray!